Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. With all the attention on attracting young workers to New Hampshire, our guests today say that's just part of the picture. They see a large pool of untapped and underestimated Granite Staters already here who could be great employees if given a chance. These include people with disabilities, those with criminal records, recent immigrants, and older workers. This hour on The Exchange, our series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage continues with this question: who's being overlooked by employers and why? Also, what it might take to reverse that. Let's hear from you. If you have experience hiring from a diverse pool of people, or you're one of these potential workers yourself, join us. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And in addition to listening today, you can also watch our program on Facebook Live. We have four guests in studio. With us is Donna Brown, an attorney with the Manchester firm Wadley Starr & Peters. She's a former public defender. She does pro bono work at criminal record annulment clinics. She's also legal redress director for the Manchester NAACP. Donna, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Also with us, Christine Dudley, workforce development director at Manchester Community College. And Christine, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Todd Fahey, state director of AARP New Hampshire. Todd, welcome back. We appreciate your time.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Andrew Houghtonville. He's associate professor of economics and research director at the UNH Institute on Disability. And Andrew, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning.
Well, all of you, Donna, you first. With all the discussion about our labor shortage that we've been hearing this week, who is overlooked?
Well, one group of people is persons with criminal records. For some of my work with NAACP about 3.5 years ago, we were aware of a movement across the country of doing these criminal annulment clinics to help people clear up their criminal record. And we've been doing them now for 3.5 years. And we've learned a lot of how having a criminal record affects people. Sometimes people come to the clinics and they're not eligible because of a lot of things or what they're charges, and we see how it affects them financially, how they might not get job promotions, they might not get jobs, they get turned down a lot for jobs. And interesting, when we had our first annulment clinic back in the fall of 16, we weren't sure, like, is anybody going to show up for this? And the first clinic, 70 people showed up in Manchester, and so we're like, well, there's, and we really meet people who are very motivated, want to get past their past, you know, and get into the labor force. And there's a, I mean, I can talk about it more, but there's a lot of barriers. Certain jobs have licensing that prohibit people with criminal records. Some employers just have it that, you know, they're not going to consider anyone with a felony, and that's just it. It's definitely an untapped source in New Hampshire.
So are we talking a lot of people or a few people, Donna? You don't have to give us precise numbers, but what's your sense of how many people we're talking about?
There's been some estimates that there's hundreds of thousands of people with criminal records in New Hampshire. And the other thing to contribute to that, it's something that you'd think would be getting better, but almost be getting worse. There's some statistics from the New Hampshire ACLU that the opioid crisis is making this worse. So more people are getting arrested for drug possession. So now they've got these convictions on their records. And so we're having people with more criminal records than we did in the past, somewhat related to the opioid crisis.
I'd love to turn to you next, Todd Fahey. Who do you see as a big source of untapped labor force potential in New Hampshire?
Well, it's certainly the older, experienced workers in New Hampshire. Everybody knows New Hampshire is an aging state, and we have some of the most talented and capable people who just happen to be older. And we continue to cling to this number of 65 as the number when everything stops. One's productivity, one's ability to be a contributing member of a team, whether it be a small or large business. And the fact is, and we can come back to it, 65 is the wrong number, and yet we cling to that. In many cases, for those who are 65 or older, or even if we go down a little bit, people start feeling that people are maybe less than relevant or less than what is needed in a workplace at 50. And our data just does not support that at all, nor does our experience.
When you say our data does not support that, meaning support the stereotype of these workers aren't really worth investing in?
Well, a couple things. I mean, I have national data, and I have a survey as recent as December. We went out to employers and talking about people's perceptions about wanting to get retrained and even their ability to pay for their own retraining. And it's quite astounding. People want to be retrained. In many cases, they'll pay for their own retraining, and they delight in working with an intergenerational workforce. There's a lot of these stereotypes, I think, that we continue to buy into. To our own peril, I think, in New Hampshire, because we are hovering 2.6% unemployment. We need every person working right now.
What do you think, Andrew? Who do you see as the untapped workforce potential here in the Granite State?
Well, certainly people with disabilities represent one of those untapped groups. If you go back to Monday's show, a lot of talk was about the labor force participation rate and it declining. And a large portion of that are people over 65, which is actually an age set by Otto von Bismarck for the Social Security program of Germany in the
before. Okay, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, 65 was a long time ago, and it was the life expectancy at the time, so that's where that comes from. Nevertheless, people with disabilities both represent people with early onset, people with developmental disabilities, and people with late onset, that have to return to work either after injury or try to stay in work with a chronic condition. And so people with disabilities represent a wide range, and the expectations that people can be productive. When you're talking about tapping an untapped resource, a lot of times it's firms aren't familiar with how to tap that resource. And so we've done a lot of work surveying employers, and I can talk more about that later.
What are the discomforts that some firms might have, Andrew?
Very good. Well, familiarity. Right. So I was raised in the 80s going into the workforce, and I saw a lot of older men very uncomfortable with women coming into leadership positions. And they had to change their attitudes and perspectives on women as women came in. People with disabilities are not in the labor force and not in the workforce. And there's some unfamiliarity with if someone's blind. A lot of people don't want to say the wrong things and don't want to do the wrong things. And when an issue comes up of accommodation, how do I deal with that? Do I go to the labor lawyer or do I go to another group? And I think a lot of the discomfort is just lack of familiarity with how to tap people who are not employed, but also how to work with people who have conditions at work.
Well, in advance of this series, we sent our producer, Ali Oshinsky, out to several job fairs around the state. And all week, we've been playing some clips from people that Ali talked to, both people seeking employees and people seeking jobs. And while you talk about people with disabilities and that sort of unfamiliarity, Andrew, I want to play a little bit from Tracy Frey. She's with New Hampshire Vocational Rehabilitation. She says one in four Americans have some type of disability. That's and right. So Tracy says it's important for employers to know what that means and to reach out to these potential workers. Let's hear.
I think the door is open right now for individuals with disabilities in New Hampshire. If they're thinking about going into the workforce, now is the time. Employers are really needing new people. They're ready to look at other labor markets that they haven't looked at before. So I think that I would encourage anyone who has been afraid to try work or is questioning, will I get a job? I think the answer is yes, there are jobs everywhere. It's your market as a job seeker right now.
All right, and again, that's Tracy Frey with New Hampshire Vocational Rehabilitation. How about you, Christine? Who do you see as the big source or a big source of untapped workforce potential here in New Hampshire?
Yep, I think we see a lot of our immigrant and refugee population at the community college system. We work with them very closely. I think they definitely are seeking jobs, and they're coming to us for English skills, for work skills. And a lot of them come to us with a very high level of education from their country. They may have been doctors, they may have been nurses, and they're coming here and they're looking for employment. Some of the other barriers that Donna talked about, it could be that the licensing is stopping them from getting into the workforce. So, you know, we really have been working with the immigrant and refugee population quite a bit through the community college system, really trying to upskill, help them with their English skills, and break some of those barriers for them to getting into employment.
And you're at Manchester Community College.
Yes.
At your particular campus, how big a group of people would you say this is, Christine? You don't need to give us exact numbers, but is this a couple people or is this a lot of people?
No, I would definitely think at Manchester Community College, I think we probably have a couple of hundred, maybe, you know, 10% of our population.
Wow.
There might be more. But I know that within workforce development and the English classes that we've been doing, it's definitely a big population for us. We're serving a couple of hundred students a year.
They're seeking English skills.
Yes.
And also certification skills.
Correct.
To get into some of those fields that they might have had expertise in their home countries.
Yes, they are.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join us. The number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, our in-depth series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage continues with untapped workers. We're asking what groups of possible employees are being overlooked. These might include, as we're hearing, recent immigrants, people with criminal records, people with disabilities, older workers. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. And a couple emails came in before the show, and Lara from Londonderry writes, "My husband moved from Michigan about 30 years ago and has never worked in the state. He's always commuted to Massachusetts because that is where the jobs and higher salaries are." Boy, that's a theme we heard this week. We've heard from a lot of people who commute to Massachusetts because of that. But Lara says he's in his mid-50s now and is tired of the long commute. He keeps an eye out for jobs, but employers seem to pass over older males with lots of relevant experience, maybe because of past salaries. But Lara says he might be willing to work for less, especially since he'd be gaining time with family and not having to pay income tax. I got another email here also about older workers. This is from Thomas. He says, "I sit here and have people tell me there's a work shortage in New Hampshire. Personally, I do not see such a thing from my perspective of being a job seeker. I've worked for a major retailer for over 20 years, decided it was time for a change. I went back to school, completed my education, graduating B.S. summa cum laude from SNHU, and then receiving my MBA 2 years later, graduating with a 4.0 GPA at the head of my class." Thomas says, "You'd think I could walk into any employer I choose and find a job." Wrong. Thomas says, "I've had maybe 7 or 8 phone screens and maybe 4 physical one-on-one interviews and not much help for older job seekers out there. Please tell me, other than taking a youth serum, what am I to do about getting a job?" So, Lara, thank you for the email. And Thomas, thank you. And what do you think, Todd, beyond a youth serum, what can Thomas do?
Well, I've heard these stories before, and I'm sorry that I continue to hear them, but I'll speak to both a little bit. Number one, the leaders in New Hampshire in the business community, and I come from that world for 20 years as a business lawyer, need to think about these untapped potentials, not just the older experienced workers, but all the cohorts we're all talking about. And I will use this word, and I don't mean it to be overdramatic, but we do that at our own peril. So we need these people. This gentleman that we're talking about, there's some stereotype that people are laboring under. So maybe they're thinking he's too expensive or he's not going to be in the workforce for a long time. That's not true. I mean, the data we have, and we have reams of data to say a lot of older and experienced workers tend to stay in the job longer. The healthcare cost for that cohort actually has been going down over the years. And it's very expensive to hire somebody who doesn't stay. They come in and they leave. And we forget that. And those people listening, the business leaders, the CEOs, the managers, and the directors need to really have a fresh look at this. And I will tell you, in a good way, many are doing just that, but many are not. So, and because of that, people like these folks are having that whole situation happening to them. Most people want to work. We can come back to my numbers. They're stunning numbers about how many people want to stay in the workforce. A full third want to work till 70 or longer. And 7% never want to retire. when you're looking at those, and those are massive numbers, the biggest growth of workers in New Hampshire is going to be those between 65 and 75 as the population ages. So while every group we're talking about here today is a really important part and ingredient, the older experienced people are as well. And by the way, I mean, some of them may also be in the groups that these folks speak to.
Well, so the impression or the fear that employers have, Todd, is these older workers will have expensive health care costs, and they're not going to be around that long anyway. You're saying not true. Younger workers tend to churn over, right, switch jobs more often.
Yeah, so I have to be careful that I don't categorize it. I mean, one thing that we hopefully we can come back to in the show is the benefits of an intergenerational workforce, because as we deal with the perennial outflight of millennials in New Hampshire and the younger people, we need to figure out how to marry the two generations. And we're not doing it well enough. And I've said it before to policymakers, and I'll continue to say it. We're an aging state. We are not going to have, 200,000 millennials descend upon New Hampshire. It's not going to happen. And you can call me a fatalist. I don't mean to be. But we should rebrand ourselves as a place where we can be a multi-generational, intergenerational workplace. Here, we can do that.
Well, as I said, we spoke with people at job fairs around the state. And here's someone who says exactly what you're saying, Todd. This is Tony. Again, we met him at a job fair. He says he's faced some skeptical looks when he applies for work, but he argues older employees have a lot to offer younger generations. Let's hear.
I believe that the young and old can work together. You know, because I'm 74, doesn't mean I can't do something. I might do a little bit slower, all right? Being in sales for over 50 years, I know how to sell. When you're gonna hire somebody right from college, yes, they know the knowledge, but to know how and where and when to do all this, you gotta be trained to do this.
Again, that's Tony, one of the many people that we met at job fairs around the state. Christine, you want to jump in there?
I did. I just wanted to make a comment, too, regarding employers. I think that, looking at hiring practices and making sure that you feel confident in your hiring practices that, we're looking for a diverse workforce. I definitely think that that's a piece that, from an employer standpoint, that we can skill and train to having the hiring process be a little more diverse. I think that sometimes people will meet with someone, they might hit it off with someone that's a lot like them. So we want to make sure that we really look at hiring practices, I think, and help employers understand how important it is that they're looking at all of the different audiences that we're talking about today.
That's really interesting. And I think that's something that you all hit on, that when people are looking to hire, it's easy to get comfortable and say, I really like Christine. Right. I just felt so comfortable being with her. But to look beyond that. I know everybody wants to jump in on this. Donna, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think there's actually some research as this applies to people with criminal records, but my gut is that it applies to all of these untapped groups. And there's some research out of Johns Hopkins that people with criminal records can actually be better employees because they're more motivated. Like, you took a chance on me. I know that, there were some hesitations of hiring me because of whatever my issues were, that I wasn't sort of a traditional employee. And so that they've done research that they are more timely, they have better retention with people with criminal records. And I'd almost guess that some of these other groups we're talking about, it would be the same thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
That's right. I reiterate that, when Todd mentioned, job churn, that young individuals may churn over their more and more jobs. People with disabilities, like you were mentioning, Donna, are likely to stay in their jobs longer and be committed and loyal to that's been a finding for decades now.
So the research backs that up.
Yeah, the research backs that up. Also, another point is kind of how do you tap this group, right? And we did a survey of supervisors. It's a national survey with Kessler Foundation in New Jersey. Uh-oh, music.
That's okay. You've got a little time.
So 26% of, or 90% of employers found that working with local community groups was really beneficial, that it helped them find untapped resources. But only 26% of employers' supervisors actually use that to recruit. And so finding new ways to recruit, to work with community organizations and with local education groups, is really beneficial, but not many employers are doing it nationally.
All right, and some of the small employers may need that extra help. They don't have human resources offices right. and so forth. We will pick up on that after a short break, and we'll keep taking your calls and emails. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are curious, civically minded, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business or organization can connect to this statewide and engaged audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletter, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn more by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, as New Hampshire experiences a workforce shortage, we're asking, who are the overlooked workers in the state? Send us an email. What do you think? exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. All of our guests work with some Granite Staters who are often overlooked by employers. We're joined by Andrew Houghtonville, Associate Professor of Economics and Research Director at the UNH Institute on Disability, Todd Fahey, State Director of AARP New Hampshire, Christine Dudley, Workforce Development Director at Manchester Community College, and Donna Brown, attorney with the Manchester firm Wadley Starr & Peters. She does pro bono work at criminal record annulment clinics. She's also legal redress director for the Manchester NAACP. One more time, our number, 1-800-892-6477. So just before the break, we were talking about some of the concerns that employers have about hiring these individuals that you all mentioned and ways to sort of bridge that gap. And Don, I'd love to hear a little bit more from you about some of the concerns on the other end from the people who are actually doing the hiring about bringing on people who have criminal records.
Yeah, and you know, it's a really good point. You know, in preparation for this show, I contacted another lawyer who's been doing some work of encouraging employees to focus on hiring people with criminal records. And he's like, "Well, I don't know if they want their names out there because I don't know if you know it's a catch-22 because there are employers out there who really focus on doing this, and but then there's some risk that if their names are out there, then they might get some like, oh, you know, maybe I don't want to go to your place because you hire people with criminal records. So there's that stigma that is out there that is a concern. And, you know, that's why I cited that study earlier that people are really motivated to get past their history and prove themselves. And we really want employers to think about this. You know, I was thinking on the way in here, I saw somebody on a bicycle, and I live in Concord. And, you know, if you do live in Concord around January, you see people riding their bikes when it's 10 degrees outside to work.
On North State Street.
Right. And those are prisoners. And I'm like, which one of us would drive to work at 10 degrees outside? So they, you know, they've come from a low place and they get very motivated and they're like, I'm going to that job no matter how cold it is if I have to ride a bike. And so but people have been through that. They can be very motivated workers. And we really just ask people with employers to consider that.
Well, our senior producer, Ellen Grimm, spoke with someone who fits that category, Stephen Miller. He's 28. He talks about his struggles with addiction, family turmoil that led him to 3 felony convictions and a couple years in prison. He graduated from the drug court program, says that was a huge help for him. He left prison at age 22, and he says that it was hard at first, but he did eventually find a position with an employer who looked past his record. He's now held that job for more than 5 years. Let's hear from Stephen Miller.
I would understand if I was the person who was hiring somebody, I would be a little reluctant myself. It's understanding, but I think that it really is important that people give other people second chances, especially if they were young and they just weren't making smart choices. And I think that that's really important.
Again, that's Stephen Miller talking about his experiences coming out of prison, trying to find a job. So you seem to be saying, Donna, that sometimes on the employer end, on the company end, they want to give people a second chance, but they don't want their company to seem, less than stellar to the outside world. Is it dangerous? They hire former prisoners.
And that's the downside of it. I really recommend, if people are interested in this, the ACLU did a report last year on the collateral consequences of criminal records. You can find it, Google ACLU New Hampshire, and it's called The Lost Labor, Collateral Consequences. But some of the research from that talked about that there are some companies who are at the forefront of this. In 2016, there was what's called the Fair Chance Business Pledge, where companies all across the country said they would take a chance on people with criminal records. And this includes Google, Pepsi, American Airlines, Facebook.
Oh, wow, some big companies.
Some big companies have taken this pledge. It has to do with some of the issues around, you've heard of the issue of ban the box, and what that means is it doesn't force employees to take people with criminal record. It's like, let them get past that first, first interview, or just look at their application. Don't just throw it over in a pile and say, oh, criminal record, I'm not even going to talk to them. So get them into the interview, meet them, let them explain them circumstances. So there are a lot of companies. Coke Industries is a big one that has made that a priority. So there's some big companies out there that realize this is untapped, that they're missing out on a lot of workers. And it's not just the kind of self-interest of missing out on workers. It's just good for us as a community, that the research shows that people who have jobs are going to be less likely to reoffend. They're going to be less likely to relapse if they've got substance abuse issues. And real quickly, I want to mention that he mentioned the drug court. One great thing that has taken place is there's drug courts, mental health courts, veterans court. There has been some legislation that said people who go through these types of courts can get their records annulled earlier.
Well, Stephen Miller definitely talked with Ellen about how important the drug court has been, and he still meets with someone from the drug court every week to kind of keep him on track. So that's a testament to the support that people need and what they can do if the support is there. Todd, you wanted to jump in.
Sure. I mean, I'd love to see us move beyond our fear, right? Our fear of people who have had a criminal history, or people who are immigrants, or people with disabilities. It's fear. And it's probably irrational fear at that. But we have a similar program, AARP Worker, Older Worker Pledge Program, where people just pledge to give older workers a shot, which is really great. And there are companies in New Hampshire who have done that. It's a national program, the same type of thing. But we talk so much, we all aspire to be better than we are on a daily basis. How do we care for people? How do we show up in our world? And we talk a lot about politics, of course. I mean, we as a culture and a society right now. But you talk about valuing a human being. I mean, people work 40, 50 hours a week. It's a third of their life. So give them a chance to work. Respect their essential dignity, regardless of their age or their immigrant status, or whether they've had, you're a 55-year-old master carpenter and you had an open can violation, when you're in your 30s and you're precluded.
Open can means you had like a beer in the truck.
A beer in the car, or you're a nurse, or maybe you're an LNA and you did something foolish, 10 years ago, and yet you've turned your life around. I mean, where's the redemption in that? So I think we need to be better, and this is a really great step in doing that. So thanks for doing the show.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, so similar pledges have been made by major corporations to kind of give people with disabilities a chance. The term I like to use is actually that people with disabilities are striving to work, right? They want to work. The issues end up being both getting that chance, getting your foot in the door, and the same kind of ban the box. It's how do I disclose my disability, right? I've had students that have had fellowships with disability in the title, and they're like, I don't want to say the fellowship that I got that fellowship because I'm going to reveal that I have a disability right out of the gate. And so getting through your foot in the door, also as a population, as we become more familiar with hiring people that are different, that have different backgrounds, whether it's immigrants or people with prison backgrounds or people who are older or different than us, I think that it's kind of a catch-22. It's are firms familiar and able to kind of bring people in? Or are they afraid? One of the interesting things that I wanted to bring up is also the concept, there's a concept in disability, universal design. And so one of the barriers are physical barriers and also workplace barriers, flexible work hours, which was mentioned in the first on Monday show, that recrafting the workplace such that it can be easily engaged. So you have the you keep people and you onboard them quickly. So universal design, things like for in Sweden, they have big programs on using iconography instead of language so that immigrants can come in who don't know Swedish as a first language, and also people with disabilities can work within a facility because it's all iconography based, not word based.
Well, and you talk about flexibility in terms of hours and schedules and so forth, and I'm guessing that that would help workers with disabilities, also older workers, also younger workers who have kids. And it seems to me we've been talking about that for a long time. I wonder how much change you've seen, though, Andrew. People have certainly talked about that for a long time. But do they talk the talk, but do they walk the walk?
Well, I can't say whether it's both, whether it's employers or employees. So, you know,
because sometimes employees don't want to be. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, it's both. But what I can say is that with regard to the ADA, it was passed in 1990.
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Employment provisions 1992 went into effect. People with physical and sensory, so hearing and vision, many of those populations are doing quite well. In some sense, if you have a hearing impairment and you have a college degree, you're actually going to have higher wages than you're likely in the tech industry, and you're going to be higher wages. The people who are kind of left behind by the ADA are people with cognitive impairments and people with mental illness. And for me, it's that familiarity, because a lot of times it's flexible work hours, doing things a little bit differently, maybe having the assistance of a direct service professional.
So, and we'll talk about direct service professionals in a minute, because I have learned this week that there is a severe, severe, severe shortage of these folks who could help the people you work with, Andrew, get more engaged in the workplace. I want to go back to our listeners, all of you, and Dick's calling from Goffstown. Hi, Dick, you're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Lara. I was just on the phone, well, not on the phone, but on the email last night with a employer in Merrimack. They're looking for an Oracle database administrator, and the recruiter was asking me, you look to be older, which, granted, you look at my resume, it goes back a long way. And, you know, he's like, why do you want to be a database administrator? Why don't you want to be a database manager or an IT manager? And my thing is, I'm at my level of what I call competence. I've found the point where I'm comfortable, where I'm happy, where I'm engageable, and that's where I want to stay. I don't want to move up the ladder. I've been there, being ex-military, you get pushed up into the management role. I've been there. I don't like it. I'm not comfortable. I want to stay where I am.
So did you get the job?
This is going to go, I don't know. It was an email message. I'll have to wait for, you know, an answer tonight, but I've got a funny feeling if they're going to say, no, sorry, we're not looking for somebody like that. We're looking for a younger person in this job.
So they're stereotyping you, Dick. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, I will say this again. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it. It's leadership. People who are running companies in New Hampshire, they're not running themselves, okay? There are CEOs running, and I'm smiling because I'm thinking of a lot of them I know personally, people who are CEOs, people who are board chairs. You have every ability to make sure that your organization looks at, in my situation, would be the older experienced worker. So somebody could mandate that and just say, look, stop with the questions like that. That's not, number one, it's probably illegal. It's close. It's right on the line. But two, think about just creating a different culture. It's a different culture, and that is leadership, and that's what we lack so much of sometimes.
Christine, go ahead.
And I think sometimes we make the assumption that if someone is comfortable and they're really happy doing their job and they're looking to stay there, that there's no ambition to get ahead, that they're not a good worker. And that's so not the case. I mean, they're going to be a better worker if they're happy and they're engaged in what they're doing. So I think that assumption is sometimes made that, well, it doesn't sound like they want to move ahead, or it doesn't sound like they want to, you know, move forward. That's fine. That's exactly where they want to be. And you want to encourage that. You want to encourage them to be the best person that they can be in the job that they're in.
Sure. A happy worker is going to be a good worker.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully the person that Dick has been emailing with is listening to our show right now. I'm interested in your work, Christine, with immigrants and refugees. You talked earlier about some of the barriers, the language barrier, mm-hmm. the certification barrier. How well does it work once someone gains some proficiency in English? Maybe they're not, mm-hmm. you know, fluent native speakers, but How often have you seen that be the key that unlocks the door?
Mm-hmm. I think we do have some examples of that through the community college system. I think that I'd like to start by saying that I think that it takes a very long time for someone to really become proficient in another language.
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes that is a little discouraging to some of our immigrant and refugee population. And so we try to encourage them to keep going and to keep learning and to keep at those skills, because the vocabulary piece is, I mean, it's a wide range of just those skills, and we want to make sure that they keep going. So we try to encourage our population to keep up with the skills, but we have definitely had a lot of our population come through maybe starting in our workforce development program, which is an intermediate to advanced English classes. So we have a pathway from our workforce development program into our developmental English on the college credit side. So we try to encourage students who are looking to go to college. We have a lot of our students who have finished our program, who are now eligible to take a developmental English on the college side. And we're seeing those students come in and enroll and register for college.
Well, and how much do you see employers these days, especially in the last year or so, with all the attention on workforce shortage, Christine, are you getting calls from employers saying, hey, can you help me find some people in your immigrant and refugee population? I might want to employ them.
I wish I could say I got more of those calls.
Really?
I wish I could say we had more. We do get a lot of calls from employers that are looking for our students. So our students who are going through our two-year, our associate's degree programs, coming out of maybe a particular trade, it might be in HVAC or technology or, one of our areas of the college. So we do get a lot of calls from employers who are looking for our students. They're looking for our students who are coming out with those degree programs and those certificates. And we definitely have, those services. We work with employers all the time, to fill those needs. But I wish that we had calls from, employers that were looking for our refugee or immigrant population. Any of the populations that are represented here, we work with all of them.
Let's take another call. Sarah is calling in from Concord. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. Yes. I just wanted to make two quick comments here. I agree that the hiring practices absolutely must change. I am an older worker. I had a high-paying job in the tech industry. I experienced a little burnout. I also experienced a little discrimination in promoting because of my age and probably because I'm a female. So I started looking around in New Hampshire, and I had to downplay my resume because I was overqualified, and I kept running into a wall where they would say, what was your previous salary? And I would say something like, well, what does this job pay? Or I would be happy to accept whatever this pays. And then they wouldn't want to talk to me any further because I would not disclose my previous salary. It was a sticking point on all of these jobs that I was applying for. What was your previous salary? So employers have to stop asking that. And another thing was, I offered to take me on a trial basis on this job. I would love to have this job. I'm fully qualified. I would just be so good at it. I would, please give me this job. And, and they wouldn't take me on a trial basis even. So I think that just points to how, the hiring practices have to change, and there is ageism, discrimination. And quickly, one real quick point is the 2.5 unemployment number I don't personally accept, because my experience is many of us just fell off the cliff.
Well, and Sarah, I want to let you know, we've heard from a lot of other people this week who feel the same way you do, really taking issue with that 2.4, 2.5, 2.6 unemployment number, saying, I'm not included in that. So thank you for the call. We got an email also on this topic from Julie in Concord, who says, I'm interested to hear thoughts about ways we can tap into our natural human resources and build bridges between our aging workforce, our Gen X workforce, which is just now emerging into management and leadership, and younger workers to help solve the shortage. So that's Julie in Concord. And Sarah, thank you for the call. We'll be back after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Our mission is to support the communities we serve, and that's so aligned to what NHPR does.
Wendy Beswick, Vice President of Marketing for Service Credit Union.
Hampshire Public Radio is all about being in the community, talking to the community, and so we feel like it's just a great place for us to get out in front of people who may not know about the credit union.
Learn more about NHPR's corporate support program at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow, we wrap up our workforce shortage series with a look ahead at how the labor force itself may change, including the impact of automation and artificial intelligence. This hour, we're asking, who are the untapped, overlooked employees in New Hampshire? What's the potential that's already here? Send us an email. Tell us what you think. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Well, all of you, just before the break, we got a call from Sarah in Concord, who is taking issue, as a lot of people have this week, with that 2.5% unemployment rate in New Hampshire. She feels like she's been overlooked as an older worker. How do you, Donna, interpret that very low unemployment number that is often cited?
Yeah, I think I would agree with her because, you know, all jobs are not the same. And it's more to do with the quality of the job and the type of job. And, you know, that's something that we see in the research regarding people with criminal records, that yeah, they may be able to get an entry-level job at McDonald's, but that when we actually had this person come into the clinic once, he was the sole supporter of a family of three. And it wasn't, he got jobs, but not jobs that he could support his family on. And I think that that number does not reflect a type of quality of job that people can support their family. And we're not talking about getting wealthy, but we're talking about certain types of jobs. And I think that probably explains the frustration with a lot of the callers this week of that number not reflecting the true issues regarding employment.
When Sarah was making her point, everybody in the room was nodding and wanted to jump in. So go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, so just statistically, this is the 2 point is really an artifact of how statistics are calculated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Let's be clear, 20% of people in New Hampshire are not working, ages 18 to 64. Sorry, I don't mean to bring in the 65. 20% of people 18 to 64 are not working. The unemployment rate basically knocks out people who have stopped actively looking for work in the last 4 weeks. So people who are called discouraged workers, people who are long-term out of the labor force or out of the labor force for a brief period of time, those people are not counted in that. So this
and does
is,
that include a lot of people with disabilities?
Oh, absolutely.
Discouraged
workers. In fact, we don't report the unemployment rate of people with disabilities because it's only about 12% right now, which is high. But that's because so many are discouraged workers and are not actively looking for work in the last 4 weeks. So it's really just an artifact. 20% of people are not working in New Hampshire, and that's a huge untapped resource.
What would help people with disabilities who would like to work but feel discouraged, feel they can't, what would help them get back in or get in the first place?
Many of them are on government programs which basically pay them not to work. And so there's been decades and decades of work trying to redesign the social programs that are very paternalistic and assume people with disabilities can't work. So that's one thing. And that's a mega national issue. What I think that individuals who are striving to work is contact community organizations, take a class and just to get introduced and get your resume, a hole in your resume. I always question holes in resumes. And so taking a course here and there helps develop a signal to a future employer that you're active. That's what I would, community colleges are great and a great resource in the state.
Todd, go ahead.
I still keep coming back to leadership, though. I think in many cases, people need to look at these resources. And I know you are always very good about posting the resources. And so for the leaders listening and for those people who are people managers or your HR directors, perhaps it would be wise to just take a look at some of the data and see if there are some other resources available by way of workers, because virtually every person in a leadership role in New Hampshire is wrestling with the issue of workforce and hiring adequate people to do the jobs. And if you're dealing with an older worker,
don't just assume something. Like this, one of the callers said there's an assumption he wants to be the manager or the next CEO of the company. He doesn't. And that's paternalistic. And it's really, it's not really a very wise.
Like, I know what you want.
I know what is good for you. And so give people the dignity of at least knowing that maybe they just want to come back to work. Older workers in many cases and experienced workers, some of them want to work 40, 50 hours a week, and some of them can. I have stories where people, they will tell you they hired 70-year-old people to do physical jobs and they run circles around some of their younger workers just because of who they are and they're motivated to work. That is no knock on younger people. But our numbers say that it wouldn't surprise you that 84%, 86% of people in New Hampshire work with different generations. 84% of those people find great value in an intergenerational workforce, and they're benefited from it. So it's not only that you're losing the body and the talent of that woman who calls in with probably a stellar resume, but you're also losing – it's almost a little selfish because you're depriving the next generation of workers you're supposed to be mentoring of her experience. And it's a different way of looking at it.
Christine, go ahead.
And I wanted to actually just make a comment as well that maybe a lot of our immigrant population, their work ethic is cultural. So they are, you know, I just talked with I was sitting down with an employer yesterday, and he has a group of a population. It's a manufacturer. He has a group of an immigrant group of population within their manufacturing services that they work extremely hard for the company. They love what they do. They offer to come in. They will. He said that they love being there and they love having them, but they're not. They don't have a desire right now to move into a different, you know, position or move up. They're really happy doing what they're doing, and they respect that. And I think sometimes culturally we need to understand where people are coming from. So it's age, it's culture, it's I think there's a lot of things that we should consider in looking for these employees.
So don't make assumptions about mm-hmm. people. Ask questions right. first and trust that the response you're getting is the real response. Like our caller earlier, he said, absolutely. No, I don't want to be at the top of the heap. I'm very happy doing right. what yeah. I'm doing.
And if not, it's an employment at will state. I mean, really. I mean, you can terminate people if it's not otherwise illegal. I mean, it's not as if these are life and death decisions. I mean, I think people need to be careful, not be so bound by their assessment of risk. There is risk in hiring somebody, but
no matter what.
No matter what, but there's risk in getting in your car and driving to work, but there's also risk in not hiring anybody and the position goes unfilled.
We got an email from Sam, whose son has a disability and is employed. Sam says, people with intellectual disabilities are the most underemployed and unemployed in New Hampshire, perhaps across the U.S. This group of individuals, Sam says, is a huge untapped pool of workers. It has been shown that they show up on time, don't call in sick, are productive and engaged employees. My son has an intellectual disability and has been employed successfully for many years. Part of the problem, Sam says, is when employers see individuals with a disability, I believe they don't presume competence, but rather the opposite. Sam says, I am asking employers in the state of New Hampshire to reach out to Voc Rehab, Easter Seals, transition coordinators at high schools, Granite State Independent Living, and other agencies to learn more about this wonderful group of untapped workers. If you don't want to hire them right away, how about an internship to see if they fit the job description? Sam, thank you so much for that email. And let's go back to our callers. Lynn is calling from Dover. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm just going to follow right on to that last email that you got. I'm on the Business Advisory Council for Project Search at Great Bay Community College. And this is a program for people with developmental disabilities. And it's a transition program, like from school into the workplace. And part of it is, of course, to get employment for our graduates. We're graduating very soon in a couple of weeks. But it's also our partner is Great Bay is Portsmouth Regional Hospital. And the other goal is to bring people with disabilities into the workforce and to expose other workers to these people in internships. They do 3 internships a year, and to change the culture of the workplace. This is an international program. It started in Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and there are 5 programs here in the state of New Hampshire. So this is one of the solutions in terms for this particular population, to give them the skills to for them to be able to display what they're capable of, for them to build their resume, And I think that we have a waiting list now for people to come into this program at the Great Bay. So
all right.
Just saying.
Yeah, Lynn, thank you very much for the call.
There are solutions out there.
We really appreciate it. Do you have programs like that at Manchester Community College, Christine?
Similar programs, yes. So I think all of the community college system has a different level. Great Bay has Project Search. So we all kind of have different ways that we work with all of these different populations. So it might be the older workforce. We offer the workforce development classes. We definitely have people with criminal backgrounds that we work with. We have a program that's across the community college system called Work Ready. And that is a grant-funded program. And that is a program for really anyone who's looking to maybe get into the workforce, has a job change, going back and talking, Andrew mentioned, you know, keeping your skills up and continuing to maybe take a class or be, you know, continually looking for opportunities. The Work Ready program that's across the community college system really is a soft skills program that helps people with their resume at those in-between stages of their life and a lot of, you know, different backgrounds. So
that's
we do
really
have programs across the state.
Yeah, so you may have the qualifications, but you don't come across well in an interview. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to approach a hiring manager, just mm-hmm. things like that, that people don't know, especially
right.
if they've been out of the workforce for
right.
a while.
Right. And so that population that comes through the Work Ready program, it is grant funded. It's completely free to the participants. And it's a great program, 60 hours of just, you know, where are you and how can we help you get to your next destination?
Real quick, Andrew, and then I got another question for you, Donna.
So Project Search, great program, started about 20 years ago at a hospital in Cincinnati, and it took leadership at that hospital to buy into that. And if you go back,
keeps bringing up
I
leadership,
keep writing
so here
it on
we
my
are.
Pages.
Yeah.
If you go back to your email, for people to do that, for hiring managers to do that, requires permission from leadership.
Exactly.
And, that's what's developed at, you know, MBA programs and UNH, Paul College of Business and Economics just started its first disability specific and also related to aging course that it's dual taught with the College of Health and Human Services and the Business School. And so as Paul College looks to build its HR approach, it's not just people with disabilities and the signals they're sending or anything like that. The hiring managers themselves need to know about diversity is not just age, race, or gender. It's not race, ethnicity. It's also disability. There's
that's
huge
interesting because often when we talk about diversity, people are thinking
right.
race and ethnicity.
It's
but you guys are saying there's a lot more to it than that. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, speaking of hiring managers, we got a great email from Stephen who says, great show. Definitely opened my eyes. We'll keep all these groups in mind when I am in a position of hiring again. Stephen, thank you so much. There's one more group of people that we've touched on, but I'd like to talk about a little bit more, and that is people in recovery. Since we've mentioned the opioid crisis and we learned on Monday that there's a big group of people that cannot get jobs, cannot pass the drug test because of this, I want to hear play a little bit for you now from another person that we spoke to at one of these job fairs around the state that our producer Ali Oshinsky talked to. This is a woman named Jessica. She said she was very happy to work at a recovery-friendly workplace. Let's hear.
My company is a recovery-friendly workplace, and I think it's just understanding that help is available. The companies need to let employees know what's available for help, for them to feel safe and not feel like they're going to lose their job, not worrying about going to their HR department or their management and saying, listen, I have an issue with drugs and alcohol or what it may be. It doesn't even have to be that. It could be overeating or it could be depression or mental illness. Whatever that may be, they should be able to talk to somebody about it and be able to get the help that they need.
Again, that's Jessica at a job fair talking about recovery-friendly workplaces. Here's my question for you, Donna, and all of you. We've talked about hiring managers needing to sort of get a clue when it comes to hiring diverse populations, people who may not seem quite the same as you. Maybe you don't feel comfortable right away. But I wonder, is that easier for big companies than small companies? Jessica in that clip mentioned HR. Small companies don't have offices that help them work through some of these things. You know, people who may need support in their recovery, who may need to take time off for their recovery, people who have criminal records, who may need to go to the drug court once a week to check in. It's harder for a small company, it seems, than a big company to manage some of these issues and that come up and give people the support they need.
Especially, you know, if you mentioned if someone is going to be out for a period of time, that definitely is going to affect a smaller business than a larger business. But, you know, another way to look at it, though, is there is a lot of support out there for these people. You know, it sounds ironic that someone who's on either the drug court or they're on probation, they've got some support for them there. There's a what's called the Merrimack County Diversion Program here in Concord, where there are people helping them with transitioning to jobs and helping, you know, maybe helping get a driver's license, things like that. So it sounds ironic, but someone maybe who is connected to the court system because of their substance use disorder may have those supports in place. And, you know, if someone's on probation or they're on one of these types of programs, they're getting drug tested. And you're not paying for it, you know, that someone else is paying for it, or they're paying for it themselves. And so, you know, thinking outside the box that someone who's in one of these programs might have that support that you don't have to pay for. And it's another reason to consider someone who's on parole, who's on probation, or in one of these drug courts, because they might have that support that you're not able to give.
What would you say to a small employer, maybe someone who runs a veterinary office or someone who runs a small, you know, one or two person construction company, who says, look, I'd like to give people a second chance, people with criminal records, mm-hmm. or I'd like to hire someone with disabilities who might need more support, but I'm just tapped out doing the work. I don't have time to give people extra help, extra support.
Well, you know, that kind of goes back to the ban the box. Like, meet with the person first. You know, you don't assume just because they have a criminal record. And you might see a very highly motivated person. You might find that this person is someone who can train themselves. It was someone who maybe when they were at the prison, they had a job that, I had a client recently who he was working at the hobby shop at the prison. He designed a computer program to make better furniture there. So he was a self-starter, you know, and so if you talk to people, you'll find these things out about them. They're not people that you need to, they're not all taking
away.
They
don't need to be coddled.
Yeah, they don't need to be coddled. They can come up with things themselves, and it may not take a lot of extra resources.
What would you say to that very small employer, Todd Fahey?
Here's what I'd say. You don't have to always build the construct or the model for letting these people work for you. Other people have built that model. And if you're getting 35 and you're losing 5, you're still getting 35 and you're only losing 5. Whatever that looks like, whether it's because you're trying to accommodate an older worker, an experienced worker, somebody who's in recovery, somebody who's maybe having to take a language class, or somebody who for whatever reason can work 35 hours a week, you're still on balance way better off. And it's all about leadership.
All right, all of you. We could have talked a lot longer. I really appreciate everyone coming in. And as Todd mentioned earlier, we do put resources on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.